you meet so many different types of people, and all of that informs an actor's work in every way possible.
Colby, thank you so much for joining me on Monday Mocker. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me here. I'm very excited.
I love the fact that you're an actor, because I'm actually dating an actress, and it's great to see during pilot season the moods that actors go through. I feel like I need a Red Bull, a coffee, and a V all at the same time during pilot season just to cope with the up and down. I got the audition, didn't get the part. Got the audition, maybe have a call back. Got the part, no, I didn't. How do you process that as an actor?
Like anything, it gets a little easier as you do it. I think for me, what works the best is to remember that nothing is personal. Every time you walk into a casting office, all they care about is finding the best person for that role. And if you're able to deliver that to them, then you're going to get a call back. You potentially get to meet producers and go from there. And you can't worry so much about what you think they want, because there's something inauthentic about that anyway. As an artist, I think it's important to absorb the information you've been given, the script, all the background that you can figure out, and internalize it and say, okay, this is what I'm going to bring to this role. And if what you have to sell is not something they want to buy, then it just means it wasn't the right part for you in the first place. So if you can separate yourself from it that way, I find it's easier to just let it go at the end of the audition. And as they, you know, that people say, oh, sometimes I think I nailed it and then I never hear from them. And other times I think I completely screwed it up and I get a call back. You can't second guess the physical reactions that you see or hear in the room. You have no idea. All you can do is you just do your best and then forget about it and go on to the next one.
I love that mindset behind what you just said. It's a very kind of don't take it personally, just keep doing your thing and just keep moving on. It must have taken you quite a journey to get there. So I'm kind of interested to see, how did you end up being an actor and how did you form this amazing mindset behind it?
I have not been an actor the whole time that I've been here in New York. I originally did move here from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And my intention from the time I was a teenager was to be an actor, to move to New York City. And I moved here and it was quite a struggle. And at that time, I would say I was nowhere near ready for some of the brutal things that happen, you know, as an actor and the rejection that you experience and all of that. It takes a great sense of self to be able to do it. And I was still figuring out a lot of things about myself, one of them being my sexuality, but just in terms of how I want to present myself to the world, because it's a really intimate thing, the way actors expose themselves. People think, oh, it's great, you get to put on different hats and outfits and become different people, but it's actually not that. You're actually letting people inside you. And that's a very intimidating thing to do, especially when you don't know what's inside you. So I actually took a detour and for quite a few years worked in human resources, which I just fell into in terms of a side career, first at the Museum of Modern Art and then later on at Calvin Klein. And I worked my way up in this alternate career thinking that I could let my acting pursuits go because I do have a very pragmatic side of me and there was always kind of a duality within me and I never knew which side I would end up on. And so for many years, up till the time I was director of human resources at Calvin Klein, I thought, this will be okay for me. You know, I'm making a really good salary. I have a really good title position, a lot of respect. I'm good at what I do. This is what life is about. And then I realized, no, this is not what my life is going to be about for the rest of my life, because there was just always a need, a desire to express myself as an actor. And that had never gone away. I just kind of pushed it down.
Let's actually take a few steps back, because clearly you have quite a story that I'm really dying to hear more about. I'm really interested in your mindset around Monday, because clearly you worked in human resources for one of the most reputable designer labels in the world. Kind of like Rachel from Friends, how she went from Bloomingdale's to Ralph Lauren.
Yes.
Lauren. Tell me, Colby, what's the first thing you do when you get out of bed on a Monday?
As someone who works in human resources or as an
Colby
actor?
As Colby Ryan.
As Colby Ryan. I get up later typically as an actor than I do if I'm doing something in human resources.
Yeah.
This is the coffee conversation,
this
isn't
is
it?
This is a coffee conversation.
I'm a bit familiar with some of your former podcasts.
Yeah.
I am not a coffee drinker. I am not about crutches to get up in the morning.
I like how you say that, even though I'm an avid coffee drinker.
But... Yeah, I don't mean that in a judgmental way. I just feel like I want to know that me being awake right now is because I'm really awake and not because some stimulant is making me awake. And it also helps me to, you know, you need to get a certain amount of sleep. If you get a certain amount of sleep, then you should feel refreshed somewhat naturally anyway. So if I would go to sleep late and not get enough sleep, and then I would get up, yes, I need a stimulant to get myself going. But to me, it all kind of ties together in terms of disciplining myself to make sure I get the sleep so I don't need the crutch.
Rana, that's a great answer. That's a great answer. How do you prepare for the Monday? Because you clearly, being an actor, you're not a usual kind of, I've got to set up something on Sunday and plan for something, unless you have an audition or, you know, you have to be on set. How do you prepare for a Monday? What are some of the routines or preparation things that you have that you do on a Sunday?
On a Sunday, I'm a big to-do list person, regardless of what I'm doing. So I usually end up starting the week or ending the weekend with a long list. There's usually, like, I don't know, 15, 20 things on the list, which is at first intimidating, but I take great pride in crossing something off the list once I've accomplished it.
Yeah.
Even if I only cross one thing off a list a day, at least I've done that and I feel like I'm progressing. So I'll make my list. I'll think about the things I need to do. And it could be anything from scheduling an acting class to reviewing my reel to see if I want to add something new to the reel that you send to casting directors and agents. It could be booking some kind of lunch with a business friend, someone that I want to catch up with, see how they're doing in the industry, those types of things. Or saying, okay, I'm going to go to the gym at this time on Monday, this time on Tuesday, this time Wednesday, etc. And every week is different. Every day is different as an actor. But the other thing as an actor is, unless you have a regular gig that you do consistently, you really are responsible for all of your own activity, which is not the easiest thing. It takes so much discipline. And at first it seems like, oh, this is awesome. I can get up what I want. No one is expecting anything of me.
Yeah.
And all of that's true. The problem is you end up literally doing nothing very easily. And now that we have all these wonderful television programs and streaming shows and Netflix and Amazon, all this stuff, you can get lost in some really quality television for hours, days, weeks, and, you know.
And you come up for air, right?
Binge watching is a big thing now. And I mean, all of that, you know, everything in moderation is fine. But that's the slippery slope. But for me, it's really just about mental organization, write it down, and then do my best to commit to it, knowing that, yes, things are going to pop up, spur of the moment, I'll get a call to do this or that, and just be flexible with that.
Clearly, you have a mindset or kind of an established way of getting through your day. Is there like a mantra or affirmation or some form of spiritual practice that you have, Colby?
I occasionally meditate. I can't say that I do it super consistently. I tend to do it, obviously, when I'm feeling stressed or scrambled, or that I feel I have a lot of thoughts in my head, and I want certain ones to come forth and other ones to sit in the background. So when I do meditate, it is something that I would do before I even get out of bed, if I can. And it's like 15, 20 minutes of just, you know, silence, sitting up in my bed, thinking. And I'm usually pretty good at shutting out everything and just thinking about what's going on, or what I woke up thinking about that perhaps I wasn't thinking about when I went to sleep, which is usually that's a good place to start.
We're talking about Mondays here and the mindset behind a Monday. Was there ever a time that you didn't really look forward to a Monday?
Yes.
Do you want to elaborate on it for us?
Sure. Gosh, in no way would I want to say that the time I've spent in human resources was not amazing for me. I mean, it's brought me out of my shell in so many ways and helped me to hone my communication skills, which for me just makes me a better actor. Also, all of the different types of people that you meet in human resources, just by virtue of the fact that you're like the main hub and everyone comes to you for information. I was hiring people. I was a recruiter for a long time. You meet so many different types of people, and all of that informs an actor's work in every way possible. There's no situation that you could throw in front of me where I'd say, oh, I have no idea how to relate to that, because I can. You know, if it's something that could happen in a workplace or in, you know, regular society, I probably can relate to it. Having said all that, the Mondays that I would regret were the ones where I had to be just in the spotlight doing an orientation for new employees that were starting that week. And it's, you know, it would be an early morning session. And so I had to come in super prepared and full of life first thing on a Monday morning. And sure, I guess coffee could help in that situation. But those Monday mornings when I would have to be on as myself as opposed to as a character could be difficult for me sometimes.
Her aunties wanted to send her to another country, so we brought her here. The Jenny Show.
I'm really curious to know that you said that you kind of had to be prepared and be on that Monday. And it's interesting because as an actor, that's what you have to do all the time, right? You have to be prepared and be on and lively.
That's
it's quite
true.
An interesting contrast, isn't it?
It is. For me, it's really all about there's so much fun to be had in creating a character. And all actors really just enjoy that. And it's not that I have a problem being myself or speaking as myself, but I don't get the same joy out of that as I do when I feel like I'm really telling a story and I'm taking whatever the author's vision is, the writer's vision, the director's vision, and hopefully educating, enlightening people about whatever the narrative is, whatever the storyline is, and whatever part I play in that. That really stimulates me a lot.
Well, let's get to know you a little bit deeper, Colby.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you take your phone to the bathroom with you?
Sometimes. It depends. Because if I'm going to be there for a while, you know, showering or getting ready, whatever I'm doing, something urgent could, I mean, my agent could call me. I could get an important text or email. Usually, no, honestly, when I wasn't acting, the answer would probably be no. No, I didn't, you know, really care about, you know, spending the next half hour to 60 minutes not knowing what's going on in my phone. I'm not that addicted to my phone. But now, by virtue of what I do, yeah, I feel like I need to be able to respond to people within half an hour. So yes, my phone's pretty much with me at all times.
And where do you draw the line for phone use in the bathroom? Like, do you take phone calls? Do you mute it when the plop happens? Like, how does it kind of roll?
Is she really going there? Are we really talking about that?
Well, you know, I'm just curious what priority your number twos are, if it's your number one, you know, sometimes. I told you I wanted to get to know you better.
Getting to know me. I'm talking about showering and shaving. And
I'm talking about another shh sound.
Yes, yeah, talking about totally different things. If I'm in that situation, the phone is right there with me. And I would say, regardless of where I am in the process, I would probably be fine answering the phone. My hands aren't usually doing anything else for most of that time. So I can certainly text or write an email or whatever I need to do.
I'm glad that I'm getting an understanding of your boundaries.
Am I red now?
No, actually, you're doing pretty well, given that other guests have gone, Jenny, that's disgusting. Well, yes, sometimes I take phone calls. I'm like, yeah, see? What happens is if you kind of slip the mute button when that happens, it's like, oh, sorry about that. I just dropped a rock in a pond. Like, what are you?
Oh,
trust me, it's happened before for other people that I heard of. And another question, Colby, obviously social media is huge these days and is a main form source of communication. Have you ever got a friend request from someone you didn't particularly like? And how did you respond?
I didn't. There have been some requests I've received on Facebook from people that either I didn't know well enough for to make sense. You know, like I would look and see, do we have mutual friends? Because I don't remember meeting this person. Or I know exactly who they are. I just don't want to, you know, to me, Facebook is the most personal of the social media forums. And that's where I tend to really just put stuff about me. In addition to career stuff, I also put stuff just about my personal life. And there's certain people that I wouldn't want to have access to that. So my response is just to not respond. Because if you, I think if you block them, then if they go to look for you, they'll see that you don't exist anymore. And then they'll realize that you blocked them. And I don't want to make people angry.
Of course. So your kind of response is, yo, I'm just going to leave it.
I just leave it. So I'll just let it sitting there in the queue and literally never respond to it ever.
That's actually, it's interesting because I think.
Does that mean?
No, it's not mean because I'm just interested how people, like obviously social media, because it's a main source of communication between people now, it's kind of like real life in the digital world. So it's kind of like how, for example, if you were to meet someone who's like, hey, be my friend, the response that you would have is, yo, I'm just not going to say anything. Other people are like, delete the request. It's just fascinating to me the mentality now behind things. But I suppose that is a gentle way, a prolonged way of saying, no, thank you. Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
I think that's how I'd like it to be done. Because what would my response be other than, oh, thanks for reaching out, but I'm not interested in connecting with you. That seems hurtful. But it's also not direct. And I do like to be direct in my life, generally speaking. But there's certain times when you don't want to wake the sleeping bear.
Where it's appropriate, you will be.
Yeah. And, you know, we all have people like that in our lives where we just, you should just go over there and live your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll just stay over here and live mine.
Absolutely. Colby, can we take a moment and talk about a moment in your life where you made a huge shift in the way that you think? Tell me about that experience and what led you there and what inspired you or triggered you to make that shift?
Well, as I mentioned before, my journey in terms of being an actor is one that has been rocky and inconsistent. One thing that has really helped me as I've gotten older is to become more comfortable with my sexuality. And in doing so, I realized that I needed to be as genuine and authentic in all parts of my life as I could. And all of that tied together. And that's, you know, that's with respect to friends and family, people that may not have been comfortable with my sexuality, my own internal feelings. For a long time, I knew I was gay. I didn't have a whole lot of experience acting on it. And so it was like, well, I accept that I'm gay. I just don't accept that I'm going to do something about it.
Right. They're two different things. Sometimes.
Two very different things.
Absolutely.
And in certain religious circles, one of those options is totally fine and the other one's not. And that can be a huge leap to get from one to the next. And it was for me. But fortunately, through the help of friends and really just getting to know myself better, I decided to be as authentic as I could. And it was a big deal for me to be able to say, also as an actor publicly, that I am a gay actor. Because when I started out in the industry, I wasn't out, but to be totally honest about it, I was out to my friends, but since I was uncomfortable with it, it certainly wouldn't make sense to me to talk about it in any sense in saying I'm a gay actor. And any professional mentors that I had met with at the time, this is when I was in my 20s, would say, you know, just for your own sake, you don't want to limit the parts that you can play. So I would just keep all of that on the down low. I wouldn't talk about that, which totally makes sense. But there's something about that that can be crippling to someone who's already feeling insecure and that they're not enough and really sensitive about such a personal issue. So I remember there was one audition I went on, and, you know, I've played a lot more straight characters than gay characters in my career. Well, first of all, there are a lot more straight characters. But for this one character, I was asked to, the second time around during the audition, could you just play it a little more gay?
Oh.
Now, this was in the 90s.
Yeah, okay. Of course. Yeah.
And I said, do you mean more effeminate? Do you mean more animated? What do you mean exactly? Yeah, you know, just more gay. Like, that's the only way they could articulate it. As if being gay is in this little box. And we all know what that means to be gay on screen, right? And I tried to do what was asked, but I felt really cheap. And I felt like just saying, I'm gay.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't act in this particular way. If I did, that would be fine. But there's so much more to being gay than acting in this one very rigid way that you're talking about. So now you would never hear something like that. And now a casting director, again, all they care about is getting the right first person for the role. And who cares about the sexuality of the person who's playing a role? I mean, the best actor who can imbue that character with the qualities they need, in my opinion, that's who should get the part. I'm all about LGBT representation in general. But with sexuality, it's a little tricky, you know, because you could say, oh, I can't believe they cast this straight actor in that role playing a gay character. We need better representation. Well, maybe publicly that straight actor has been informed that he needs to be telling people he's straight. He could be gay in his actual life. There actually could be a gay actor playing that role. It's just that because of the labels that the industry sometimes would want us to put on ourselves, you have to say something different. So I try not to judge that or to say it's right or wrong. Do we need to always have an openly gay actor playing an openly gay character? I guess if they're right for the role, sure. But I understand both sides of that issue. But the revelation for me, getting back to your question, and it was such a roundabout way, is once I came to terms with all of that, once I started to come to terms with where I needed to be, then that was easier for me to make the decision about my work experience and what I needed to do. and just being more comfortable in myself helped me to make difficult decisions that were not popular with everyone in my family and friend network.
Right. Well, given that you've gone on this huge journey of acting, you're now starring in a show called Gross Misconduct. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I love how it says just another day at work and it's with an E.
Yes.
So it seems
work
like a pretty cool show. Tell me about it.
I think it is a cool show. It's a 6-episode digital series that is currently on YouTube, and it features an eccentric human resources team that is navigating their personal and professional lives under the guidance of their director, a high-maintenance chap named Mitch Gross, Gross with an E at the end.
Yeah.
And Mitch Gross is played by me.
Right. Are you kind of life imitating art here with the Calvin Klein HR director thing going on here?
Yeah. Coffee? Well, when we decided to do it, the idea was thrown out. I believe I suggested, let's try a workplace comedy. That seems to be a great way. You know, we can create our own content. You can have all different kinds of wacky characters in the workplace. And there's one workplace that I'm really well informed about, and we could probably find a lot of humor just from some examples that I could give. And I thought HR, which is such, you know, it's usually thought of as such a dry kind of environment. When you think about on the series, The Office, Toby, the HR director,
yeah.
He's someone that nobody ever wanted to talk to. He was always the wet blanket. He was just kind of, you know, coming in and asserting himself. I thought it would be interesting to have an HR team who's responsible for setting the bar for workplace behavior for all employees, where you have a director who doesn't know what the hell he's doing. And hopefully laughter comes out of those situations when you see them. And then it was important for us to have we have four main characters, but two of them are in the LGBT community.
Right.
And one of them, yeah. Obviously, and then another is the character of Alicia is a transgender woman played by Puyi Mohseni, who is a transgender actress. She's Iranian-American. And we just really wanted to focus on, hey, let's have leading characters. One is gay and one's trans. And guess what? The story is not going to be about him coming out. And the story is not going to be about her struggling with her gender identity. That's all been there, done that.
Yeah.
And they're just in the workplace going through the same types of situations that we all do next to their straight counterparts.
I think it has gotten to the point in art, on TV and in film, where you don't really need to state the obvious. I think it was Lady Bird. I don't know if you saw that film, Mitch.
Yes.
Right. You knew her brother was adopted, but you don't need to declare it. You kind of knew that. Because of certain inferences, but they didn't actually say, oh, look, we adopted you for X, Y, Z. They don't need to say that because I think the audience is educated enough, you would assume, to be like, okay, we can piece this together. And I think it's great that we're moving past that now and that the evolved way of presenting these things is encouraging that form of dialogue.
Yeah, I agree. And there definitely is a lot more. There's more representation when you look at TV now. It's interesting. We shot the series last October.
Mm-hmm.
And then we released it just last month. But just in that time, Will and Grace came back. Queer Eye came back.
Wow, yeah.
Netflix.
Yeah.
The series Instinct with Alan Cumming as the lead, where his sexuality and the fact that he's married to a man is very peripheral to the rest of what's going on. You have Champions, where you have a teen, openly gay lead in that. Pose, which just came out and features a lot of leading transgender actors about the ball scene in the 1980s in New York, debuted on Netflix a few weeks back. So we feel like it's the perfect time because we're in this new space where we are starting to see more stories where you don't have that kind of stereotypical gay character on the side. You can actually they're just people, you know, not unicorns, not something to just laugh at, you know, for the one scene in the movie, but we can actually be a part of the main story.
Fantastic. Well, Colby, thank you so much for your time today and for joining me and sharing your story. I feel like I've learned a lot about you and kind of like the setup mythology behind Gross Misconduct, given that your journey. How can we find the show and stay in touch with you?
Well, the show is on YouTube, so you could find it by just typing in Gross Misconduct. That's Gross with an E at the end, Grosse, Misconduct. Or an even easier way, I would say, to just access it and also see a bit of the background and peripheral information is to go to grossmisconduct.com, our website. Again, gross with an E at the end, misconduct.com. We also have a Facebook page called
gross misconduct. It's pretty easy. Everything is gross misconduct. We're on Twitter. You can find us easily there. We're on Instagram. And then for me personally, if you want to stay in touch with me, I'd love hearing any comments anyone has about the series. It's Colby Ryan Actor on Instagram or Colby Ryan Actor on Twitter. We would love to hear feedback from everyone who sees it.
Fantastic. So don't forget to check out Gross Misconduct. That's gross with an E. They'll all be up in the show notes on MondayMockerPodcast.com. So Colby Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. It's time to pop.